Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. By Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.
The reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, I won't finish the season. I won't, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of, you know, you got to improve, whether it's them telling me, hey, we got to improve, or them pulling me. You got to get better, and that'll be what the rest of the season will be about for me.
Yeah. All right. A little pie chart of blame coming up on Mackie and Judd today. We will also pay tribute to Sid Hartman, 100-year run for Sid Hartman. Also, just right off the bat, if you haven't already checked it out, I believe it should be available right now as we are talking to you guys. A special Royce Unchained, either on the Royce Unchained podcast feed or on the Mackie and Judd podcast feed, where Judd and Patrick Royce, both longtime colleagues of Sid Hartman, tell stories and reflect and reminisce. So definitely check that out. Before we dive into our show here today, a quick shout out to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated has been helping business owners, speaking of 100 years, for over 100 years, based in Owatonna, Minnesota. 1904 is when Federated was founded. And they're on Twitter, too. Think about that. They were founded in 1904, and they have evolved into the social media era the last 10 years. They're on Twitter, at Federated INS, if you want fresh, relevant risk management content on a variety of topics, whether it's working in extreme temperatures, going to get some low-end extreme weather this week, it sounds like, distracted driving, you name it, at Federated INS on Twitter. And if you're a business owner and you want to find out how Federated helps business owners and helps provide peace of mind, federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
Yeah, you go back and correct what took place. You talk about it. You take the coaching that you need to get, and you need to, you know, be hard on yourself too, and coach yourself, and identify, you know, why mistakes are happening, and correct them, fix them. You know, whether that's, in the way you prepare on the field, off the field, you know, whatever it may be.
That was Kirk Cousins. Maybe his worst game as a Viking. And I don't care about what happened in garbage time. That guy threw three interceptions in the first half, including one on the first play. And we're going to get into all of that pie chart of blame. We'll find a way anyways to do silver linings after a...
I'm looking forward to how we're going to do that.
Okay. We'll find a way.
It's going to be an experiment.
Might be a short segment.
In reaching.
Things we learned in the NFL this Sunday, but... Middleway through that game, our mutual friend Chad Hartman tweeted out that his father, Sid Hartman, the legendary, iconic Sid Hartman, really the face of Minnesota sports for decades and decades, passed away at the age of 100. And Judd, you worked with Sid very closely at the Star Tribune for a long time. Declan and I have certainly been around him in press boxes and whatnot. And I have my own stories to share, too, but just real quick, the full deep dive is in the Royce Unchained episode, and you guys did an hour, and that's where the full deep dive is. But just your quick thoughts here for our Mackie and Judd audience on Sid Hartman passing away.
Three things come to mind immediately now that I've had time to reflect on yesterday. One is, it's only fitting that he passed away during a game itself. So, like, because we always said that he would die in a press box, which he did not, thankfully.
What was the score of that game when he passed
away? They were way behind.
Kirk Cousins, man.
He just said, you know what? So that's one. Two is the most fitting Sid thing ever. The tribute to Sid is this. On the day he died, his column was in the Sunday paper.
Yeah.
Like, there is no more Sid Hartman thing than, because we always said he will work till the day he dies.
And he did.
And then he'll probably die on a keyboard or in a press box, and thankfully he did not. But he had a column in the Star Tribune on his dying day.
Amazing.
The third thing is, and everyone I've talked to, including you, has said this, and it's absolutely true. We've been talking about Sid retiring and or probably dying for the better part of 25 years, okay? We have been preparing for it. It went from being, I think in both cases, this is going to happen someday, to almost a gag of he's never going to die. We'll all be dead first.
He got hit by a car like 6 years ago.
He bounced off the car outside Target Center, chastised the woman who hit him, and went in and covered the game. I believe the line was, watch the bleep where you're going. He got up and went into the game. But the thing is, so you sent me the note that Sid had died and alerted me to Chad's tweet about it. I'm sitting there in the press box, and I haven't seen Sid in months. I haven't seen Sid since the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the note from Chad, and I'm processing it like a guy who's 32 has died.
Yeah.
Like I'm having to process it. This is a man who's 100 years old. I think the ordinary reaction to anybody Sid's age who dies is the immediate reaction, not the, oh, that's a shame. The immediate reaction is, that's a great life. That's a great life. This is not surprising. You know, I actually was surprised.
And it is a great life, but I'm with you. He's 100 years old and everyone's just sort of shell-shocked. Like, what?
Yeah.
Sid Hartman died? How is that possible? And, you know, we were just talking with Patrick Roycey off microphone. So Patrick turned 75 years old this weekend. You are 50 or 51 now?
Almost 51.
You're 50. I'm 35. Declan's in his late 20s. So whether you're in your late 20s and you're Declan, or whether you are 75 years old and you're Patrick Roycey, Sid Hartman has been a daily fixture in your life if you're a Minnesota sports fan. And so I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's not like your grandfather dying, or, I mean, it's like a part of your Minnesota sports daily consciousness has died. It's a part of your daily consumption habits, a part of the fabric of the teams that you've rooted for, whether you're 75 or 25, he's been part of the fabric of your favorite teams here in this town for almost a century as a working man.
Yeah. And he was, so he started selling papers, I think in, as a kid around 1930 or so. He started writing a column for one of the Minneapolis papers around 1945, but he was born in 1920. Okay. Like, he goes back to Babe Ruth. Like, he was, until yesterday, on this planet, a man who goes back to the time that. So, yeah, it's just this all encompassing. And so many people who knew Sid through the years also saw different generations of Sid. Your experience with Sid, both in print and on CCO and in person, Phil, is different from mine. Mine is different from Patrick's. He spanned so many different generations and did so many different things that we all have Sid's stories, and we all have periods in which Sid was extremely important in the sports market, but they're all different because it's so vast. I mean, you're 30 something, right?
35. Yep.
Right. Dex is 27. We all have these different remembrances and ideas of Sid because the man worked for so long and wrote so many thousands of different columns and pieces and had so many scoops at the various papers through the years.
Yeah, I did enjoy. I was on my way into the office, into the studio this morning, and I had to flip on WCCO. I was driving between like 8:30 and 9 o'clock coming into the office. And I caught the last 15 minutes or so of Dave Lee's show in the morning. And that's, so real quick before I jump into that and praise that, that's how I grew up on Sid. So I remember, you know, born in 1985, I remember every single morning as a kid, my parents and my parents got divorced when I was 6 or 7. So I spent, you know, 5 days a week at my mom's and then a couple, you know, weekends and stuff at my dad's. And for sure on the weekdays, WCCO's morning show was on all the time. And so I always caught the 6 o'clock. It was like the 6:40 or something hit every single morning for years and years with Sid Hartman and Eric Escala. And it was just like must listen to radio as a kid growing up. And so to flip on, because I think Sid did like 6:40. He did 8:40.
Yeah, he did
something
like
that.
3 or 4 hits per morning, I think.
Yep. And so this morning, Chad did the 8:40 hit.
Oh, that's
instead
cool.
of Sid with Dave Lee, and it was emotional. It was great. I mean, we don't ordinarily promote other radio stations and media platforms, but go check it out on demand, however you can. And it was amazing. And I think what stands out to me too is because everyone keeps saying, and they're right, there's never going to be another Sid Hartman. And while that's true, like there's never going to be another character and figurehead like Sid Hartman, I also think the era that he represents, the sports media era that he represents, is a bygone era. And it kind of has been a bygone era for like 15 or 20 years, but he has kept it alive because he has kept working until the age of 100. And it's the era where a singular sports columnist could rule a market and could influence change and really have authority as a figure in a top 20 or 25 sports market.
Yep.
Media is too fragmented now. There's just there's team centric media platforms.
And scoops don't go to local journalists now.
Yes,
they go to Adam Schefter.
I mean, Sid Hartman for decades. I mean, not only was he running the Lakers in the 50s, but like even as a columnist and as an insider, was influencing moves behind the scenes for decades in this town.
Oh yeah, Sid had power beyond belief. Sid has. I saw two things change for Sid in my time at the Star Tribune, which started as a copy aide at the age of 19 in August of 89. The first thing I saw change dramatically, and it morphed and shifted for a while, so it was not one day, was what Sid would complain about for years and eventually, I think, gave up, conflict of interest. He could never get his head around why the local paper didn't want to promote and cheer for the local team. And this is not a shot, but I will tell you right now, one place, one media place in this market that owes Sid a debt of gratitude, Sid, KFAN. Because if you think about the approach of several of their hosts and towards the Vikings and things, and by the way, it works. It works. But if you think about the devotion that they show, that was Sid. Like that was Sid years before anybody thought about all sports formats on radio, before they thought about, you know, Rubes and trying to capture that.
Yeah.
Sid was the first one really who aggressively into the 80s and 90s went down that path of defending the teams at almost every turn, long after the majority of columnists and beat people in towns had been like, no, we're either going to be critical or if nothing else, not take a stand.
Would he ever turn on, because he always befriended coaches, and it was partly because he was a huge fan and wanted the teams to do well. It was also a good business decision in that
yes,
he would get inside information and scoops, and in turn, they would get good publicity and be painted in a positive light, right? I mean, it was kind of a game that was played.
And they trusted him because of it.
But would he ever turn on prominent figures before, like a team would fire a coach, and then he would write here's the follow-up, sort of like why this had to happen.
Right.
But did he ever do it beforehand, like, publicly, I mean, behind the scenes, he had sway and he had connections.
Right.
But did he ever come out and say, yeah, Mike Tice needs to be fired? I'm going to tell the Wilson print.
If he did, it was very rare. That coach would have had to literally screw him on a scoop.
Yeah.
And then he might get mad and lash out. The famous one. So, Phil, the most famous example of what you're talking about, where he did a pivot on a guy and absolutely hammered him. Go back and find, I believe it was during Carl Pohlad and the Twins contraction. And I think when it looked really bad, but before the judge came out here and blocked contraction, basically, when it looked like it was really going the wrong way and that there was a good chance that the Expos and Twins were going to be just flat out killed, I think I edited a column he did. I think it was me where he hammered Pohlad. Like, just took off the gloves.
Yeah.
It's the meanest in print I've ever seen Sid be to a guy who was his friend to a certain degree, I think. But that's what it took. Like, it took contraction.
Yeah.
So if you started to struggle and lost five consecutive games, Sid was going to be the last guy on earth to say, you know what, let's fire Mike Tice.
Do you guys remember the first time you ever saw Sid Hartman in person? Or if I could ask it a different way, all of us, you know, getting onto the sports media track professionally, right, in our own ways, the first time that you ever saw him, so you're on the track and you're, you know, an intern or you're part-time, whatever, like whatever your initial job was, and the first time you ran into Sid Hartman in that setting?
I think mine as in the media might have been right before I started at the Star Tribune. I was at like a Gopher hockey or basketball game. The first time I saw him was, so I was a super geek as a kid. I used to force my mom to take me to Twins games, and we'd sit in the second deck at the Met, and I would sit by the press box. And I remember seeing like Sid and Patrick and those guys in the old Met Stadium baseball press box. And at that point in time, Sid was late 70s, early 80s. Sid was around 50. No. He had to be around, 60 by that time. But he was a giant at that point. And so, like, this was, and this is so hard to articulate now because it's changed, but this is literally pre-ESPN. Mm-hmm. Like, there weren't celebrities nationally like there are now. It was local. I mean, aside from the national sports shows, the media and the sports coverage was local. And so those were the big dogs. And seeing Sid, like, you could tell very quickly by that point, and it's true, that Sid ruled things. And everybody else was there and working, but Sid's sway back then was absolutely huge.
Yeah. Dex, what about you?
I think first time I saw him was probably in 2015. I worked for Major League Baseball Advanced Media as a photographer, and I think I remember seeing him at Target Field then and being in awe of it. And then obviously, you know, I had minor interactions with him. You know, by the end of it, that walker was a weapon.
Oh yeah. So no, he would pick it up.
Yes.
He'd pick the walker up, and he's had a walker now for probably six, seven years, somewhere in there that he's used
at least,
partially. And he'd pick the walker up and like,
yep,
wield it as a weapon and jam it in people's, like, get out of my way.
Oh, it was genius. He would walk the walker.
Yeah. And as Judd and Patrick were saying, like, if he saw, like, one time I had a one-on-one with Brian Dozier, I believe during the 2017 season. So, like, I waited for his scrum to finish, and then I had a one-on-one. I organized it with Morse. And then, of course, like, I'm not even halfway through my first question. Here comes Sid.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not.
One-on-one between Dozier and Sid. And then eventually Dozier was able to answer my questions. But it was just like, all right, here we go. Classic Sid.
That was Sid. Yep. That was Sid. Until about the last 3 years or so. I mean, he would just be a scrap iron dog, man. If you had something that Sid was after, Sid, and this included if you worked with Sid. That was the crazy thing. Sid was going to get what he wanted. And I can't tell you guys the amount of times when I covered the Vikings where he would say stuff like, Tice is not going to be fired. You're crazy. Be like, Sid, I've heard from a really good source. He's going to be fired. He's not going to be fired. The maddening thing was after Tice got sacked and fired, Sid wouldn't be like, I'm sorry, I was wrong. He'd be like, oh, he got fired. And then he would pivot and write, Tice should have been fired.
Yes.
And that was the funniest thing.
Super competitive.
He was on to the next thing before you knew it. Leslie Frazier's not going to be. No, Sid, I think he is. I think he's going to be fired. The only way that I found to slow Sid down from if he got on a rant was to point out how poorly a local team was doing and then say that it depressed me, too. You're crazy about the Vikings. And I'd be like, Sid, this is so hard to accept. Have you seen how bad the Vikings? This really upsets me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess it does. But it was all a game. It was such a fun game for so long. Yeah.
I told this story to you and Pat just before we jumped on and started recording the show here. But the most validation I have ever felt in my still pretty young career, like having been in sports media for 15 years or so, and I think I was 2 years in. Royce and I did a show together for 4 years, Royce and Mackey. And I'm trying to think of the setup here. So Sid and I had interacted in press boxes for probably starting in like 2005 or 2006. The first time I ever saw him was in the free hot dog line, Peg's Hot Dogs,
at
the Metrodome
press
box. I think I got elbowed out of the way for the mustard or something. But and I believe he spilled mustard on his white shirt and asked if I could hand him a napkin.
That was a Sid staple.
So, spilling Classic. Mustard on the white shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had run into each other in press boxes, you know, starting in like 2005 when I was an intern and just like gathering audio in clubhouses and stuff. And then I covered the Vikings from 2007 through 2009 for KFAN. And Kevin Seifert had left at this point, or right around this point, for his ESPN.com job. And so the front row in the press box for Vikings home games, it was a handful of you Star Tribune guys, and then it was me from KFAN.com, and then it was like Larry Fitzgerald Sr. and some others to the right, like Pioneer Press, like Sean Jensen and those guys to the right.
Sure.
And the seats had shuffled to where like you didn't you're like concentrate for 3 hours guy. You don't want to be like having Sid ask you questions. So
oh yeah, I wouldn't do that.
So you were on the other end of the Star Tribune line.
Yes.
Sid was on the right end and we sat next to each other. And so for 3 years I would help him change batteries in that old school tape recorder. He would, because he's in his mid-80s at this point, or his early 90s, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so he'd elbow me like five times a game and ask, like, hey, who caught that pass, or whatever. And so he started to build this, like, okay, I know that person's face. He helps change my batteries in his tape recorder, in my tape recorder, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then it graduated to, I got the job at 1500 ESPN, and Patrick Royce and I do a show together. And Sid, I don't know how often he would listen, but listened enough to know that I was Mr. Stats was my nickname. You would call me Mr.
So he must listen, yeah.
You got Mr. Questions and Mr. Stats. Tom Pelissero was Mr. Questions and I was Mr. Stats. So he listened enough. But he would always do that routine where he'd go around press boxes and he'd make fun of people and he would just like, he'd rant about things and it was all just like, it was all in fun. Sometimes he would get actually mad.
Oh, it might
stuff,
not be in
right?
fun sometimes.
But like, he'd go around and do his like, hey, it's Mr. so-and-so and Mr. so-and-so. And he'd make fun of you and stuff. He'd go around. And in the middle of one of those routines in like 2011 or 2012, a couple of years into the Royce and Mackey show, it's like he snapped out of the routine. Mm-hmm. He put his arms up on the press box table that I was sitting at. Mm-hmm. And he gets like a foot and a half away from my face. And it was like a real human emerged from the sort of, you know, the character. And he said, I just want to tell you, you do a damn good job with that Patrick Royce on the radio. Keep up the good work. And then he walked away.
Yep.
And it's the most like genuine interaction we ever had. Otherwise, it was just like, you know, just talk, whatever, talking about random stuff. And it's the most validation I've ever felt. And I had to sit there for a few minutes like, oh, my God, Sid Hartman just walked up unsolicited and complimented me.
Yeah.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
Imagine telling 7-year-old. You know, Phil Mackey, that this was going to happen.
Or your dad, who would have been thrilled.
He was the first person
were thrilled by that stuff.
He was the first person I called afterwards.
That's really cool.
So I thank Sid for helping to give me a moment of validation.
So I spent about 3 years on the copy desk at the Star Tribune, pretty much exclusively being the guy who read Sid's copy. And yes, Sid wrote his copy. Now, I kept it in Sid's voice, and I had to change all the names to the correct spellings because he couldn't spell names and would often just guess. But the first question I always got is, does Sid really write still? And I could tell you that when I was on the copy desk and read Sid's column, he still wrote it. But here's the best example, too, of both Sid, of both Sid's popularity here and the change in the reporting business in the last probably 20 years, Phil. The famous column, Randy Moss, I play it when I want to play. Okay. Randy Moss, for the most part, as a player, hated the media. He did not trust adults. He did not like adults, but he loved Sid. So here's the two best parts about this story were Sid at that time, I think, wrote for like Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Okay. So Moss gives Sid this anecdote on a Monday. And Seifert reminded me last night that Seifert actually, so Sid wrote the column, which was, of course, a mess and had to be cleaned up. But the column was done and sitting in our computer system at that time at the Star Tribune. Seifert came in like Monday night and read the column and he saw the quote. And now I believe the quote was at the bottom of the lead item. And Seifert told the copy desk, he's like, this is huge. Randy Moss is saying basically to the Vikings, I'll play when I damn well decide to play.
Mm-hmm.
This is circa 2000 or so, I think.
Yeah.
At that time, Seifert is told, and Sid, including Sid, said, I write for Wednesdays. It's not going in Tuesday's paper. So this was, we had in our computer system this quote that now you couldn't get out on the internet fast enough, okay?
So Sid talked to Randy one-on-one
exclusively.
And got that quote.
And
okay.
Randy, being a smart dude, told Sid he full well knew that he was going to set off a brush fire or a huge fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the second part, though, was Sid had this, I think, at the bottom of his lead item for that day. So let's say it appeared in Thursday's paper. I read it on Wednesday on the copy desk. So I'm cleaning up the column, getting the names spelled right, putting them in bold. I see this quote and I'm like, this is way too low and this is way too good. So I take the quote and move it up in the column and put it in the headline. And of course, it instantly takes off. Not kudos to me, but it's just how different the business was too, and how much control. I mean, so
did Sid have control over headlines?
No. People who write stories basically don't. Mm-hmm. But we're talking 20 years back. So yeah. he's approximately 80 at this time. And Randy Moss has given him a quote that now, to my point, you couldn't get out in the public fast enough.
It's funny because the order of events now, let's say you were even lucky enough to get a one-on-one with a guy like Randy Moss as a local media member, okay. Right? Which really doesn't happen.
Correct.
Like local media members, their leverage to get inside information now compared to 10 or 20 years ago is almost zero.
Yes.
Even from like you and Seifert, and then you and Chip, and then when you and Tom Pelissero were a tandem here in 2011 and 12, you guys broke a ton of local Viking stories.
Yep, it's gotten.
I don't know are even like breakable 10 years later in some ways. Like some of them are breakable, but with social media blowing up and national reporters having platforms,
yes,
it's just more efficient for guys to go to the national level. So let's say that happens and you get the local, holy crap, Randy Moss just told me he plays when he wants to play.
Mm-hmm.
But my column doesn't run for two more days. Like, The order of events now would be you instantly tweet it before writing anything, probably, and thus give away all your like leverage.
Yep.
I guess if you were the only one, you could put it on the website.
And, but you still get it out.
You get it out like within the hour.
Immediately.
Basically. Yeah. It's amazing.
But think about that.
Yeah.
And that's 20 years back.
I didn't realize that Sid got that one-on-one. I play when I want to play.
Oh, Moss. Legendary. Moss would not talk to – he did a few group things, but for the most part, Sid would go in, hey, Moss, you got, and Moss would be, hey, Sid, what's going on? And it was the greatest. And yeah. Moss, but guys like KG and Moss loved him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you right now, the majority of people who have notepads, pens, and tape recorders or cassettes or whatever they have were not loved by those guys.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Hey, one more quick anecdote from one of my friends texted me and reminded me of this. I think it was when NBA City had just rebranded to Hubert's, the other Hubert's, just connected to the Target Center, right? Oh, yeah. And I didn't know this about Sid, but apparently he would sometimes cover the first half of a Timberwolves game, or he'd cover the pregame, get the quotes and stuff. And then sometimes he would just go and belly up at the bar, not to like drink alcohol, but he would belly up at the bar and like get food alone inside Hubert's when all the fans were in the arena, when it was a little bit more
really?
Empty. Yeah. And so a friend of a friend story, but I trust it. A friend of a friend from Wisconsin was in town visiting. Huge Packers fan.
Sorry to hear that.
Badgers fan.
Yeah.
And the Vikings were going to play the Packers. This is a handful of years ago. I can't remember. Some big Vikings Packers game was on the horizon. And so my friend's got a couple beers in him. He walks up and it's like, oh my God. Is that Sid Hartman just like sitting at the bar right now? Like, no way. And they're trying to get a view, you know, it's like, I mean, he's pretty distinct looking. So they finally realize even a few beers in, like, oh my God, that's Sid Hartman. And so my drunk friend from Wisconsin kind of wobbles up and, hey, Sid Hartman, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so. And Sid just wants nothing to do with it because he's there to just like, I think there might've been a Wolves game on TV and then like another game or a Wolves game in the arena and then like another game on TV or something that he's trying to pay attention to, like a Gopher basketball game or something. And so my friend gets kind of rejected, like Sid doesn't turn. And finally my friend says, well, I'm a Packers fan and you guys are in trouble this weekend or something. And Sid turns almost like the Rocky bells going off. Sid turns to my friend and says, you say you're a Packers fan? We're going to kick your ass this weekend. You get the hell. Like, he just starts berating him for being a Packers fan in the middle of Hubert's downtown.
Oh, that was Sid.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sid would berate you. And that's the thing is, I mean, there's so
he'd berate,
many
like,
great Sid
high
stories
school
because
parents
of that.
For their kids going, who is Blake Wheeler?
Blake Wheeler, who tweeted that he berated his mom, and Sid doesn't even like hockey. That's my favorite part. Like, football, basketball, I totally can see. But, you know. Blake's mom, who, by the way, nicest person on the face of the earth, gets a phone call from Sid. Let me tell you something. Your kid better play. It's last thing on Sid from me. 1991, the Twins have just won the World Series. And this is just, so Sid's 71-ish. This is the power of Sid at that time, okay? Sid has, to reward the Star Tribune Sports Department for its coverage, Sid has a get-together, rents out the ballroom or the room in the Calhoun Beach Club for us, and has Kevin Tapney, Herbeck, and maybe one or two more Twins show up. And they show up and actually like mingle with newspaper people. Think about this for a second. And Sid was so, it was really cool because I took Dawn, and Sid was so incredibly proud. And like, he's like, you know, get up, Tapney, say something. And so like, these guys are the Twins players who show up on a Sunday. They've just won a World Series, okay? So the power of Sid, a newspaper man, can get two very prominent Twins players who just won a World Series title to show up for a bunch of newspaper people because he thought, you know, and rightfully so, the paper had done a great job of covering the Twins. But that's the type of thing now. It's hard to process that.
Two more quick anecdotes along those lines of just like how connected Sid was, and just when he talked about close personal friends, maybe he was over-exaggerating a little bit with some people. Not really, because he was able to pick up the phone and put in requests and things. Mm-hmm. And I saw a couple of our local media brethren tweet anecdotes yesterday. So Doogie was one of them. Doogie in 2002 was a part-time producer at KFAN, and him and a college friend were going to be in New York on a trip or whatever. I was going to say spring break, but it was during the baseball season. So they must have been on some like summer trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And Doogie was also producing for Chad Hartman. And I think they might have even gone, I think there might have been a connection to the JCC too in St. Louis Park. So there's,
sure,
if they went to the same religious places, whatever. Anyways, so Sid catches wind that Doogie's going to be in New York and they're going to go to the Yankees game. They're trying to see if they can get tickets or something.
Get great Yankees tickets.
So Sid calls George Steinbrenner.
Yeah.
Doogie and his friend John, who now works for the Red Sox, they get seats. But then somebody comes walking up to them and like taps Doogie on the shoulder from the Yankees and says, "Excuse me, are you Darren?" Yeah. "Please come with us." And they moved these two like 22-year-old college kids to the George Steinbrenner ownership seats, front row next to the batter circle, the on deck circle.
Yep.
Just like two random dudes from Minnesota because Sid Hartman picked up the phone and called George Steinbrenner. Another one, Justin Gard, producer at KFAN, who I used to intern for like 15 years ago. So, and I think Doogie was involved in this too, which is how the ticket connection was made. So they, I don't know if they had the trip planned to Notre Dame Stadium or if the trip was sort of like, we were maybe thinking about going to the USC Notre Dame game, the Bush push game as it turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to the game. Sid Hartman gets them tickets. On the envelope, when they get the tickets from Will Call at Notre Dame Stadium, the envelope says P.Carroll. Because Pete Carroll was the coach of USC.
Yeah.
Sid called Pete Carroll and got tickets for Doogie and Justin Gard to go to the USC Notre Dame Bush push game.
Sid's hookup on seats, which I used a few times, was one of the most incredible, because if Sid got you seats, they were going to be great seats. And he would tell you sometimes, tough ticket, don't know, I'll try. But then he would call the coach, the GM, the owner. He once pulled me aside on a Friday or Saturday, I think it was, and said that he had gotten somebody two seats for that weekend's Penguins Wild game, but they had turned them down or they couldn't use the seats. He asked me, "Do you want them?" I said, "Of course. Yeah, I'll take them. I'm off. I'll go." They were on the glass.
Yeah.
The man never got bad seats for the most part. It was the most incredible thing.
Yeah, you're never sitting in like the third deck.
But his Steinbrenner connection, and he and George were so close that his hookup in Yankee Stadium was always incredible. In fact, he and Steinbrenner went back. He befriended George when I think George Steinbrenner was maybe a special teams coach, assistant coach at Purdue for football.
Amazing.
They went back to the 50s. Yeah. And that's the thing is, he befriended Holtz when Holtz was nobody. Steinbrenner, same thing.
Bud Grant.
They were kids. They were kids and friends. But he went back with so many of those guys to a time where they were, you know, just like slappies, and Sid adopted them. There was one time, this is the best. It's a Saturday, and I think I was a copy edit at the time, so I'm probably 22 or 20. And Sid asks my buddy at the paper, because it's our dinner break, do you want to go out to eat? We're like, oh, yeah, cool, sure. He's like, okay. We get in his car, driving with Sid, death defying, by the way, death defying. It was really scary. And go to the Vecchio's on campus.
Man.
He parks.
Rest in peace, Vecchio's on campus, too.
He parks in the back lot. He's like, follow me. We're like, okay, cool. We walk in through the kitchen. It's like a scene from a movie. We're walking through the kitchen, and he's giving the same grief that he gives upon arrival at the Star Tribune to the people in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And we get this prime table, and we get, and it's just incredible. Like the stories like that were so much fun. And you are a kid at the time, and you don't appreciate it, but you're like, I know it's special. I just don't know how special. And upon seeing that he had passed, so many of those come flooding back because it's just such a unique thing.
He also just had special behind the rope privileges that he had sort of cultivated and created himself over the years.
Yeah.
That other media members and other even Star Tribune employees just didn't have.
Or you couldn't have.
Yeah. I mean,
you'd be fired now for some of those things.
You think about like at Winter Park, for instance, the longtime Vikings practice facility up until they built the new one. And they always had the media scrums, at least the last like 15 years or 10 years of it. They would always have the press conferences and the podium things in the corner of the practice facility. And then the media room was across the street when they built the new media center. And those are really the two areas you could explore. You could explore the practice fields when you had permission. You could explore the indoor, just the fieldhouse area when there's press conferences. And then you could be in the media center across the street. Well, Sid was able to walk into the weight room area and walk into the offices and literally just like go where all the players could go.
Yes.
And I always remember local media people just like bitching about it, right? Why does he get to go back in there? And it's like, oh, because he's Sid Hartman, and that's the way it's been since the 60s.
And he was never going to betray trust. Like, if you let me go back there, I'd be trying to dig up stuff. And Sid would.
Oh, it's Vasante Shenko icing his knees.
Yeah, and Sid would, but you would never find out. That's the thing. That's the difference. And I think today's people who work as reporters find it repulsive. But the difference back then and through Sid was, he went by a set of rules that caused teams and coaches and management to trust him.
Yeah.
Totally different. And you couldn't do it now if you wanted to. I mean, those days are gone. But yeah, I mean, he would wander around and go into coaches' offices and berate them or give them grief. But the one thing that they knew was if they didn't want something to get out, it wasn't going to get out. And for a long time, that was fine.
Okay, one last thing. And then there's another full deep dive, Royce Unchained, part of the Mackie and Judd podcast feed, where Judd and Pat tell stories galore. You mentioned Sid's driving. Oh. So he drove that black Cadillac around for a long time until a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was just a boat of a new black Cadillac. And I'll never forget, like, I've only been in a couple little fender benders, so I'm lucky enough, knock on wood, to never have, but like the closest I ever got to being in just a horrible situation, 55 in Winnetka about 9 years ago. And I'm waiting to turn left. And so I'm waiting for an arrow to turn left onto, I think it was Winnetka. I get the green arrow and I go across and I'm turning left. And all of a sudden, like I have trust that when I get the green arrow, the cars coming from the other direction are just going to stop, right? And so I creep out, I get the green arrow, I start turning left, and coming from the other side, turning right, full speed ahead with like no regard, black Cadillac. And I, at this point, have no idea who it is, right? And I slam on the brakes and I hit the horn. And this person doesn't just like, you know, sometimes people will turn into the right lane.
Yes.
And you turn in the left, which is still BS, by the way. Yes. Like, let me make my turn.
Yes.
This person not only takes up their lane, but cuts into the left lane. So, like, coming up, doesn't stop at the red. And I'm just like, I feel like I almost just died. And so I speed up to pull up next to this person just to, like, you know, see who it is and give him a piece of my mind. Sure enough, Sid Hartman.
Of course it is. Oh, yeah.
Almost killed me on 55 and 1 neck.
Being in Sid's backseat was one of the most frightening things as far as driving I've ever experienced. And that was going from the Star Tribune on Portland to the Vecchio's in Dinky Town.
Yeah,
that was nothing. No freeway involved. But yeah, he was a driver who didn't necessarily abide by the rules of the road.
It's amazing. So Sid Hartman, 100 years and an icon and the face of Minnesota sports for a large chunk of those 100 years. And if you want even more inside stories and just anecdotes, Ricey Unchained today. And I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of other tributes. The Star Tribune's just done a heck of a job with everything in the print and online editions. I know. So Ricey has an obituary that he started writing like 12 years ago and has updated a couple times. He also has a story, an original story from yesterday, too, on StarTribune.com. But we've got our normal Monday things that we have to get into here, gentlemen, starting with these three things.
But they're going to the air. Off the play, fake, and it's intercepted right off the bat by Deion Jones. Empty set on 3rd and 9. And that ball is intercepted at the 40-yard line. Going down to cradle it, A.J. Terrell. That ball hit and intercepted. And Kirk Cousins has thrown 3 picks in the first half. This time it's a Aluakon with his first career interception.
And let's just jump right into it.
Now on Mackie and Judd.
This chart makes it as clear as I can to you.
The pie chart of blame.
You want to blame somebody?
Vikings lose to a winless Falcons team that clearly had a pep in its step after firing Dan Quinn last week. And dropped to 1-5 on the season going into the bye week. Kirk Cousins throws 3 interceptions in the first half, the only time in his career he's ever done that in the first half. Let's just go right into the pie chart of blame. Judd Zulgad, slice us your pie.
This was a disgusting performance. This was absolutely grotesque. My pie chart of blame, only 3 pieces. Not worth more. It's not worth an effort that the Vikings didn't give for me to try and divvy up too much pie.
Plus, you know what? We just did 40 great minutes on, I don't know about great, but we did 40 minutes of tribute on Sid Hartman, so.
All right, I'll start from the bottom and work my way up, but keep in mind, it's just 3 pieces. The defense I'm going to give 10% to. The defense was not good. The defense is a work in progress. Some parts just stink. Some parts one would hope will improve. You thought you had seen improvement, I think, in Seattle and Houston, certainly, and there was a definite step back taken, so the defense, 10%, move on. 20% goes to Zim. This team was not prepared. I mean, they have the Seahawks game. You came away and said, yeah, it's a loss, but there's good things here. I could get my head around justifying, as tough as the Seahawks loss was, I could sort of justify things about that game, and there was good. And this is not a good, I mean, this is not a very good team. The Vikings aren't. So I could be positive about that. This game, man, yeah, the Falcons had a pep in their step from Morris being their interim coach. I understand all of that, but you're at home. I know there's not fans aside from what the 250 that they had in the stadium, who, by the way, should have been allowed to boo. But that was really bad. That was an unprepared team, and it was a team that eventually, that at some point in time, pretty early on, actually looked like it quit on the coach. And so I've got to give 20%, which is still not a ton, to Mike Zimmer, and that's because I'm saving 70% for the guy who deserves it. Kirk Cousins, this loss starts with you. It's on you. You were awful. You padded your stats. You got up post-game and talked about, if I continue to throw picks like this, I'll be benched, which is nonsense. It's BS, and you know it, because the Vikings don't have the guts to get a backup quarterback who they think can replace you because you're so soft to start with. Everything about you is disgusting. I was disgusted by your effort. You were a complete joke when your team, and by the way,
yes,
too, let's go back to the third quarter in Seattle when your team needed you to calm things down, and you couldn't even do that. Instead, you went completely freaked out and threw a terrible pick. Every time you screw up, we're like your parents. Well, it's not Kirk's fault. His friend Johnny gave him the weed. Well, guess what? Kirk smoked the weed, and that is Kirk's fault. 70% goes to a gutless effort that's padded in a box score. And the only thing that bugs me is that you weren't yanked at halftime, so you had to eat those stats and accept how crappy you were. Instead, you're left in to pad your stats like you always are because everyone's coddling your ass. You don't deserve it.
Hey, you held him to 20 points, man.
Yes,
you
sir.
Gave us a chance at the end, but I got three words for you. You like that?
Yeah! Bravo, Judd Zolgad.
Disgusting.
Take a bow.
Thank you. Thank you very
Take
much.
Take a bow.
Wow.
A lot of pent-up anger here.
All right, Declan, you want to give us your pie chart of
sure,
blame here?
Sure, I'll be pretty quick here.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
I'm same with Judd. I give 70% of the blame to Kirky Cousins for that performance yesterday. Just embarrassing. I mean, the first play of the game, the pick, I was sitting down, drinking a mimosa, right after my Corona hard seltzers, and I said, all right, as long as we don't screw up, I was with a buddy, I said, as long as we don't screw up here, I think we're going to be okay. First play of the game, interception. Just like... So on brand. Just are you kidding me? So 70% of the blame to Kirk Cousins and the garbage time stats. Yeah, I think I looked it up yesterday. His performance against the Colts in week two is his worst performance from a passer rating standpoint in his career as a starter. So that did happen. But this one I think was even worse than that. Because from the get-go, it just was off the rails. So 70% of the blame going to Kirk Cousins. 10% of the blame for not having Dalvin Cook and your running game being completely non-existent. I think all of us went into this game saying, all right, what are we confident? Yes, are they going to miss Dalvin Cook? Is he a dynamic player? Of course. But Alexander Mattison's a capable back. This should be okay. You should still be able to run up the middle against the Falcons. You couldn't at all. And it was very frustrating watching Alexander Mattison getting stuffed, Mike Boone getting stuffed, and just the usage of both of them in general was really confusing to me. And now Zimmer is... doubling down, we didn't run the football enough yesterday. I'm seeing post-game comments and comments today about it. That's really frustrating. So 10% of the blame goes there. Also, 10% of the blame goes to Mike Zimmer for that exact philosophy I just talked about. So that's up to 90% of the pie. And then the final 10% goes to the offensive line. And I know it's easy to blame the offensive line and be like, well, it's also Kirk Cousins too. But they allowed 16 pressures yesterday. 16, and it was a collection. It wasn't just, Ezra Cleveland's having a rough debut, or Garrett Bradbury finally came down to earth after a strong season. All of them played very poorly, multiple pressures allowed. So again, my pie chart of blame, 70% to Kirk Cousins, 10% for not having any semblance of a running game, 10% to Mike Zimmer, and 10% to the offensive line.
And just a quick, for the record here, just a quick amendment to what you said.
Okay.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
So 16 pressures according to Pro Football Focus. They did pin 3 pressures on Kirk Cousins, either holding the ball too long or walking his way into pressure on his own.
Got it.
So 13 offensive line pressures allowed. Of those 13, the guards, Ezra Cleveland and Dakota Dozier allowed 9 combined pressures of those 13. Ezra Cleveland was great on the first interception of the game. If you guys watch that back, he was a brick wall, baby. No excuses on that one, but then he allowed 5 pressures later on.
All right.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
I've got 2 pieces of pie. That's it for this game. There will be other times in future games to give out more pieces of pie, and so I don't want anyone to think that because I am withholding pie from certain parties that those parties aren't also in my mind, okay? Like, Mike Zimmer does not get a piece of pie this week. Okay. It doesn't mean that he's doing a great job coaching. I just feel like this week it's important to emphasize 2 specific pieces of pie, okay? The first piece of pie, 5%. Just a little taste.
A little taste, okay?
And it's for Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina Panthers. Because if they beat the Falcons last week... I'm sorry. If they don't beat the Falcons last week...
Right.
If the Falcons get their first win of the season against the Panthers team, Dan Quinn doesn't get fired. And if Dan Quinn doesn't get fired, the Falcons probably play like zombies in this game against the Vikings. And then he gets fired because the Vikings beat them.
Okay.
But because I've got the stat here, including this game yesterday, since 2010, teams that fire coaches midseason are now 13-8 the week after said firing.
Okay.
And those are like... well under 500 teams that are garbage enough to fire a coach. And those teams are now 13-8 the week after firing a coach. So if Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina Panthers had laid down like they were supposed to against the Falcons, Dan Quinn doesn't get fired until this week, which leaves 95% of my pie.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
For Kirk Cousins. Why are you guys so hard on Kirk Cousins? Like, I feel like we hear that all the time. You guys light up Kirk Cousins every week, but why didn't you talk about Ezra Cleveland? All right, let's talk about both. Ezra Cleveland was garbage in this game, all right? We could do a pie chart like of why he's playing right guard and not left tackle or left guard, but that's a conversation for later this week. Ezra Cleveland was garbage, okay? Kirk Cousins, on the first bleeping play of the game,
a play on which Ezra Cleveland was great. Watch it again. Watch the entire offensive line on that first play. It's the brick wall that we all wanted. For years, we've wanted that brick wall on the first play of the game against a bad team at home. Give Kirk a clean pocket. Watch him drop back and throw darts all over the field like he's Joe Montana. You guys don't appreciate Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
All you guys do is rip on him. Give him an offensive line and see what happens. The offensive line forms a perfectly manicured brick wall to start the game. And Kirk Cousins throws an interception right to a linebacker. What are you doing? You guys practiced all week long. You guys lost close games to undefeated teams. It's time to take back what's yours and get on the right track and beat a winless Falcons team. And this bum throws a pick with a perfect pocket to a linebacker to start the game. It's one thing if you're never going to elevate your teammates when they need it. It's one thing if you can't overcome adverse circumstances and unclean pockets. It's another thing if you just actively shipwreck a game out of the gate like he did in the first quarter yesterday. So while there will be time to divvy up other chunks of pie, Kirk Cousins for yesterday gets 95% of my pie chart of blame.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
It's time the excuses stop.
Why don't you give an offensive line? Why don't you blame the offensive line? Go watch that first play yesterday.
Well, and seriously. He's paid to elevate the entire team. That's what he's paid for. Like, if I'm going to go down the path of, you know what, you're right, then I need him to give me back money to spend on other players. But if you're going to take that contract, you have to take that. That's the thing is, in a big sports town, they would look at the reality of if you're making as much as Kirk is making, you are paid to win games. If you have to single-handedly. And Kirk in the first half submarined that entire game and that entire team. And he got a 2-year, $66 million extension. Not to submarine his team. So I'm so tired of the defenders. What are you getting at? Like, what's your point? Look at his contract. You're wrong. He's paid so much that he has to single-handedly win games if that's what it takes. And by the way, Justin Jefferson gives you a chance to do exactly that, okay?
Yeah. Dude, like, what are you defending anymore? Like, why would you even want to defend it? Why would you even want to defend it? What is the point? It is what it is at this point.
But they're going to the air, off the play, fake, and it's intercepted right off the bat by Deion Jones.
The reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, I won't finish the season. I won't, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of, you know, you got to improve, whether it's them telling me, hey, we got to improve, or them pulling me. You got to get better, and that'll be what the rest of the season will be about for me.
That is such garbage. When Sean Mannion, they're never going to lift you. You know that, too. Like, what he said is just a lie. He's lying to himself. He knows he won't be lifted. That's the maddening thing. Like, he's basically saying, if I don't do my job, I'm going to be fired, full well knowing they'll never fire him.
It's a little bit like,
it's nonsense.
Like the Terry Ryan agreement. Remember when Terry Ryan had the lifetime contract?
Yes.
I love Terry Ryan. I don't know why I just compared him to Kirk Cousins. He's much better at his job.
But Kirk Cousins,
for a long time than Kirk Cousins was.
But what Kirk's saying there is a non-factor because he knows it's nonsense.
Yeah. You know what, though? This might only appeal to a small chunk of Vikings fans. It's the first time we've even been able to do this. We're a month and a half into the regular season, but the Vikings are off to a terrible start, one of their worst starts in recent history. And the only thing that can make you feel a little bit better is some good old-fashioned Packer vent line.
Oh!
Go, Pack, go!
This is the difference between the Packers and the Chiefs. The Chiefs have a high-flying offense. A guy like Le'Veon Bell gets released. And they sign them. They sign them because they're trying to win another Super Bowl after just coming back. And you just don't see that from the Packers. And I'm sorry. I've been a Packer fan my whole life, and I'm just tired of seeing it. When is going to be the right time when we do something to upgrade this team to say to the players in the locker room that we're trying to win this whole damn thing?
Go, Pack, go!
courtesy of our friends on the Green and Gold postgame show on the Fan of Milwaukee.
I'm so glad it's back.
They're 5-0 going into that game.
Did you guys watch any of that Packers-Bucks game yesterday thinking, as the Packers were just getting their asses kicked, thinking, man, if only they had Le'Veon Bell right now. If only they had Le'Veon Bell.
Not Aaron Jones, one of the best backs in the league, but we need Lev Bell.
I love this.
Go, Pat, go!
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Hey,
you bet.
Gary kind of stole my thunder about staring down Aaron Rodgers, staring down Adams. I want to go back to Adams' tweet last week before the bye. Oh, I know my body more than the trainers. He deleted the tweet. Now, after the bye, 2 weeks, Adams and Aaron Rodgers are probably talking, and it seems like Aaron Rodgers threw out the game plan and wanted to get Adams a ball, no matter what. Because, you know, Adams is a big star. We're going back. Aaron Rodgers proved me wrong. Because he played within the system the last 4 weeks. He gets a star receiver back, and he's targeting him, staring him down. He's not playing in Matt LaFleur's system. And I would like your comments, because I don't know much.
Go, Pat, go!
I don't really know much, so if you could just give me your comments.
But I'll tell you that he's not playing. This is one loss. One loss.
One loss.
Go, Pat, go!
Hey, pal, what's up?
Man, I can't even think of the words that I want to say. I can't say I'm on the air, man. It feels like last year all over again. We get our butts kicked by the Chargers last year. We go into San Fran. And they annihilate us. And now, you mean to tell me we had to wait 2 weeks for this bad effort that they put out there today? It was no misdirection. It was no deception or offense, nothing. It was just vanilla, vanilla, vanilla.
Go, Pat, go!
I love bringing up the Chargers game from last year. Like a meaningless regular season loss to the Chargers, because we have to put that in the context of where
they
we're
never
at.
Forget.
Yeah.
Caller 2 is the best so far, though.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I will break down the entire thing, but I know nothing.
I don't really know anything. If you guys could just help me here, I'm drunk.
Go, Pat, go!
Hey, man, listen, it's losses that you can overcome in a season, and it's losses that just, you know, big steps backwards. I think this was a big step backwards.
It's over.
Listen to the depression in the voices, too. They're 4-1, but the voices sound like they are probably 1-4.
I got one more for you.
Go, Pat, go!
Like this, because all this does is reaffirm that, remember when I was saying about when are they going to play a physical defense or a defense that we can get a better barometer of this team? Well, they met a physical defense today. Just like I said, what happened? Just like last year. San Francisco beat the brakes off them early. We said, well, it's an early season game. They'll shake it off. But what happened? We met San Francisco NFC Championship, and it was like a replay. The same type of performance. At some point, it comes down to the talent.
Go, Pat, go!
Poor guys.
I know nothing, but the state of mind of the starting quarterback was this.
Here's my deep conspiracy theory about how Devonta Adams and Aaron Rodgers decided to freeze out the rest of the offense.
Yes. But I don't know anything.
I don't really know anything.
Actually,
That's just a guess.
Just let me know what you guys think. Look at that. So I don't know. Maybe the Packers can lose a couple. We haven't even been able to do Bears vent line because they keep winning these ugly games, too.
5-1?
Ridiculous. I don't want to talk about it. Actually, did our...
the defense is good.
On-air production meeting here, did Evan B. grab the Nick Foles cut from yesterday? Did you guys hear the Nick Foles cut?
No.
Let me check.
And if not, we should definitely just find it real quick here, because you want to talk about how frustrated we are with Kirk Cousins' leadership.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, so let me set this up. The Bears are 5-1. Nick Foles has been the starting quarterback for 2 or 3 weeks now. It's ugly. The offense doesn't look amazing. And I heard this clip. What's it, like a minute long or something?
It's 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes long.
Let's listen to some of it here.
Okay.
I just want you to listen to Let's play a random Kirk Cousins soundbite.
Okay.
A losing team that's supposed to be maybe even contending for like a playoff run, Vikings, and right. what their quarterback is saying. And then what a 5-1 Bears quarterback is saying. So here's the Kirk Cousins bite.
Yeah, you, I mean, you go back and correct what took place. You talk about it. You, you know, take the coaching that you need to get, and you need to, you know, be hard on yourself too, and coach yourself, and identify, you know, why mistakes are happening, and correct them, fix them. You know, whether that's, you know, in the way you prepare on the field, off the field, you know, whatever it may be.
So that's me, the sound you heard, wanting to run through a brick wall for my quarterback. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's really inspiring stuff.
I love it.
All right, so that's the quarterback speaking on behalf of a team that's wildly underachieving and supposedly frustrated. This is the quarterback of a 5-1 football team.
Well, I first say, would you rather lose pretty or win ugly? I think that we'd rather win ugly. You know, I think that's the common thing. So, I think it tells you a lot about our team. Is this who we are offensively? We want to improve. We want to get better. We want to have rhythm. But ultimately in the NFL, it's about winning games. It doesn't matter how you do it. It just matters that you get it done. If you put up 50 points and you lose a game, those 50 points don't mean anything. So right now we're winning games. We're playing together as a team. We can improve. I think that's exciting. If we were winning these games and playing perfect and they were this tight and we're playing perfect, what do you do? Where do you improve? I mean, then we're sitting here as like, man, I guess when we just, you know, play those teams, it's just not going to happen. Well, right now we have a lot of areas to improve offensively once again, but we are figuring out ways to, you know, score and get points and move the ball and do those things. We can fix what we're doing. It doesn't happen overnight. Offenses don't get fixed overnight. Sometimes they don't get fixed throughout the course of years. You've seen in the NFL, there's been teams that have been bad offensively for a very long time. We're not one of those teams. We're a team that's young, offensively. We're growing. We're getting to know each other. We're figuring out who we are, and we're doing it at the right time. And as a team, we're winning these games. And I think that's what's important. Now, we're not going to get complacent and say, hey, man, we're 5-1. This is it. No, like we're sitting there in the locker room after the game talking through it. Hey, we got to be better here. This is what we got to do here. Communication here, route running here. Hey, we got to be able to run the ball here. We know that. I know y'all going to ask those questions. We know that. And that's what's exciting, because we don't have to have y'all say, hey, you doing this? Hey, we know. But we also know that we're going to improve because we believe in one another. And that's what great teams do. Great teams find a way to win a game. Bad teams win with prettiness. Great teams win no matter how it takes. So I'm proud of our guys.
All right.
I think we're continuing to improve.
Well, that's good. It was the second part of that is what I wanted you guys hear. How he's just saying the first part was cliches. And actually, because we should run that on Purple Daily, mm-hmm. let's just cut that first part of cliches out entirely.
Absolutely.
So we can get to the point on it. But I love that. He's basically saying, like, and just like the way he talks like a real confident human who connects with people. And Kirk talks like a corporate-made mannequin quarterback who's, like, programmed to say things after he throws touchdowns and interceptions.
Kirk's saying what he thinks you should hear. Nick Foles is saying what he really thinks.
Yes.
Like, Kirk is never... That's the problem. Kirk is not real.
Kirk is a more talented quarterback than Nick Foles. Nick Foles is a better leader than Kirk Cousins. Therefore, I'd rather have Nick Foles,
right,
personally.
But if Kirk Cousins could find... If he has a real personality, I'd like to hear it. Like, he is constantly spewing... It's not the cliches. It's what he thinks... He's trying to shape things towards the direction that he thinks we should hear things. That's a coach's job. That's not a quarterback's job. A quarterback like Kirk should get up and say what Nick Foles said, which is, and by the way, too, after your performance, in Kirk's case, yesterday, no we's. Like, we got the we's. We need to do this. I need to, and but then it turns into we, which is a real problem. That's an I day.
Yes.
I need to do that. I
yes.
shouldn't have done that. It's an I day.
Yes.
You fall on that sword. Even if you don't believe it, you fall on that sword and you do not include the rest of the offense, because you know what that says then to your teammates? Oh, he's taking responsibility. We
yes.
appreciate that.
Deflect credit, accept blame. That's what a great leader does yeah. in these situations. If you throw three interceptions in the first half, I'm with Judd. That is I
yep.
need to be better. Even if you know that there were problems and that wide receivers ran the wrong routes, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. A great leader swallows it, owns it. And on the flip side, if you guys go for 350 yards, that's a we did great. Even if it was you overcoming how stupid your teammates are, like, That's a wee. So, well, we can't wrap the episode. Let's do this. Let's do things we learned on NFL Sunday tomorrow, because we've gone long with our Sid Hartman tribute. But we have to at least squeeze in some silver linings, as we do whenever the Vikings lose. Viking silver linings on a Monday here on Mackie and Judd. So, Judd Zolgad, you're on the tee box. Let your tee one up. What are your what's
hold
what's
on? Let me put the lining? Ball. Let me put the ball down and get out my 9-iron to try and hit it. All right. I think I've got the obvious one here, because there is one. There is definitely one. And this guy is just darn good. Justin Jefferson. And I know it came in garbage time too, but I'm not faulting him, okay? 9 catches, 166 yards, 2 touchdowns. This guy is a Pro Bowl player right now.
Yes.
He's that good. He needs to be involved and incorporated, I think, almost constantly. He is talented enough to find ways to be incorporated, so don't give me this. Well, he's being doubled, and now we can't go to him, okay? I don't buy that. But I think that's the obvious one. Like, they hit this pick. This is a home run pick.
Yes.
This kid is special. This kid is going to be great, and I can only hope that this team starts to get things in the next year or so righted as far as the quarterback and the offense goes, because this guy should be on highlights nationally almost every Sunday.
I'm trying to think of how many, this is going to sound crazy, how many wide receivers I know for a fact are better than Justin Jefferson in the NFL right now. It is not a very long list. There might be two that were on the field for the Falcons yesterday, like Julio Jones is still ridiculous. Calvin Ridley's ridiculous.
Calvin Ridley's very good. Oh, yeah.
So you might put those guys on. I think you probably put another handful of guys
on. But Jefferson.
On. DeAndre Hopkins.
Michael Thomas.
But Justin Jefferson is just getting started. That's the scary thing.
Yeah, he's 21, right?
Like, he's a kid. In game, what, 6? So, I mean, we're talking about a kid who's just starting.
Yeah, he is only, let me find this here, only, I think, the 3rd or 4th player in NFL history. Here it is. Players with 3 or more 100-yard receiving games in their first 6 career games. Justin Jefferson, Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, and Byron Williams. That's it. Randy Moss, I think, did it 3 times, maybe 4 in his entire rookie season. We think of that rookie season. It was the Dallas game. It was the Green Bay game.
He caught a ton of touchdowns.
And then a bunch of touchdowns catches.
Touchdowns are what stick with us, I think.
Yep. So Justin Jefferson is very much on track for one of the great rookie wide receiver seasons of all time. And, yeah, a lot of it was in garbage time.
And that's with his first 2 games basically being nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Declan, what's your silver lining for the Vikings?
You know, I actually think Jeff Gladney is slowly taking steps forward. And even a number came out from PFF this morning that said he's actually the NFL's top graded cornerback against the run this year.
Okay.
And you know what? Like, look, he's a cornerback. I would prefer for him to be dominant against the pass. Obviously, that's his main objective. But I do think tackling is important and being instinctive is important. And it's a slow burn. There was no training camp here. There was no preseason. But I do think there is uprising happening with the cornerbacks on this team and Jeff Gladney. And obviously Cameron Dantzler as well. Are they perfect products right now? God, no. But I do think that they're making steps forward to be successful cornerbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, there was that one play, I think it was him, that it was the Matt Ryan sort of joystick play where Ryan looked like he was going to run. Then he took a step back off the line of scrimmage and threw that lob pass.
That was so pretty.
That was awesome.
And Julio Jones went from blocking Jeff Gladney for Matt Ryan to then just slipping behind Jeff Gladney.
Yes.
Catching the pass like an NBA player in the low post, and Gladney lost his footing on that play, and that's all over the highlights today. But
that was such a nice play by them.
Cam Dantzler, I think, was targeted 14 times, and there were like 10 or 11 catches on Cam Dantzler.
But, he had a bad day.
But still, I think this can wind up being good experience for those guys. Like, this is them being thrown right into the fire. It's Julio Jones. It's Calvin Ridley. It's Davante Adams in a couple of weeks here. So might as well get it all out of your system. It was T.Y. Hilton, I think. Like, there's been some good wide receivers on the slate. All right, my silver lining is more big picture. The Vikings are only 1 game out of the #1 overall draft slot right now.
That is the silver lining.
They are
1-5. Yeah.
They're tied right now.
Preach.
Record-wise, with the Giants, with Washington, the Chargers are 1-4.
We need a Jets win.
Houston, Jacksonville, both 1-5.
Bad.
Actually, what we need is a Jets firing of Adam Gase.
Yes, which I'm afraid is not going to happen.
Like, they're going to keep losing for Adam Gase because he's just just obviously like the least likable coach in the NFL.
What's that?
So is there an assistant coach that would take over and click with Sam Darnold a little bit and just get these guys feeling like three wins? Can they?
Yeah, I like I love where you're coming from.
I think the best case scenario for the Jets from a Vikings perspective is 3-13. Like, can the Jets find three wins after they fire Adam Gase?
And I'm afraid they're not going to fire him.
They're going to fire him.
They should fire him. I'm afraid they're not going to.
What's the first tiebreaker after record? So if like the Vikings and Jets were 3-13, what's the next? Do we know what it is?
So I think Tankathon.com, I believe they currently have the tiebreaker because it's not head-to-head. Yep, it has nothing to do with head-to-head. I think it's strength of schedule. Mm. And so if you let's say you had the Vikings and the Jets are both tied at 3-13 or something.
Vikings strength of schedule is better, I think, right?
But the weaker strength of schedule is the tiebreaker.
Right.
Because what they're saying, according to Tankathon.com, and I might be wrong on this, we can check for tomorrow. What they're saying is if you both played the same record, but you played a weaker schedule than I did and still lost those games, then you are more worthy of the number one pick.
Got it.
I think that's how it works.
Yeah, we'll have to check that.
Okay.
So right now the Vikings actually have the sixth pick, according to Tankathon.com,
you are right,
even though
they're
1-5.
The Jets need to fire Gase. I'm afraid that the one thing the Jets are smart enough to do, though, is appreciate how absolutely horrid they are and then not fire him. But I hope you're right, because if they fire him, you're probably talking three wins.
Yeah, and then like the Texans are going to win some games. The Texans were right in there with.
I think the Texans
yesterday.
Are. Yeah, I think the Texans like 4 or 5. Games. Yeah, I think the Texans are fine.
Even the Jaguars, man. Gardner Minshew's got 2 or 3 games of magic left in him, doesn't he? The Vikings could make a couple trades. They could trade Riley Reiff in a week or two.
That's what this week should be about. By the way,
there's some bloggers and some. I saw
I'd
our
be
guy
burning up the phone lines.
I'm going to put this reckless speculation into the universe because our friend VikesFan1930 tweeted.
Yeah, I saw this last night.
Reckless speculation.
He's saying, and I don't know if he is saying this himself. He also like tagged Viking Age in there, Vikings blog. So he's saying, either second or third hand, that some reliable sources are telling him that players are asking for trades behind the scenes.
I think it's a secondhand report. I think he's getting it from a guy who he says was very credible on what other issue. There was something that did happen. Oh, Diggs.
That's right. So random bloggers and fans are saying that everyone wants out.
Reckless speculation.
Well, if they don't, who cares? Still trade them.
I agree. 100%.
Rudolph, Reef, Anthony Harris. If you're not bolted down, everything must go.
Harrison Smith?
The fire sale. If I get calls, I'm listening.
He's 30.
I'm listening for sure. There is nobody, if the cap implications aren't too much, there is nobody on this roster short of Jefferson, Danielle Hunter, like a very small list. There is nobody that I'm going to hang up the phone on you.
Yeah. So
and I'm taking draft picks, by the way.
Plenty more to talk about throughout the rest of this week. And we are going to mix in, we've got some lists as it pertains to the trade deadline. We're probably going to do that on Purple Daily. So if you're not already subscribed to Purple Daily and listening to our daily Vikings conversations or watching them on youtube.com/Purple Daily Podcast, we appreciate everyone getting us over 10,000 subscribers on that YouTube channel. And we're almost to 1,000 subscribers on our other YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScoreNorthMN. And again, be sure to check out Judd Zolgad and Patrick Roycey telling Sid Hartman stories on Roycey Unchained. So we'll see you guys tomorrow.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.